Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Hey, readers and writers alike, thanks for joining me, as always, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another fun-filled episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Guys, this is episode number 39. Oh my gosh, get excited! We're almost to 40. We're almost to Noah's number. And I gotta tell you, I can't believe... I know we're not super close, but I can't believe how close we are to a year's worth of episodes. I'm like getting crazy excited over here. Whew. Thanks for sticking around. If you've been enjoying the show, call to action really quick. I highly would appreciate any reviews on iTunes, ratings, comments on the show in the show notes, or just shout out to me at Twitter. I'm at CantankerousBen. Come by, say hello. I appreciate that. Today I'm going to be reading from romance author Alyssa Jefferson. Very excited about this. She's a brand new sort of indie author, so we're going to talk a little bit about Alyssa in a minute. Before we do, quick author announcement of my own. Drum roll. Brrr. Actually, two announcements, I guess. One is that book four in my Starship Fairfax series, The Star Wizard, goes live in just a couple days here on the 11th of December here in 2017. So if you're enjoying those books, or if you're interested at all in short, quick, punchy action-adventure sci-fi, sort of in the vein of Firefly, I highly recommend you check them out, because they're mine. And the part two of that announcement is that I wrote another free short story leading into that series. It's called Stowaway. You can read it for free on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Wattpad, my blog. It's also included in another 99-cent anthology put together by Alastair Shaw. And that anthology is called The Guardian, 11 Short Science Fiction Stories. So kind of like The Officer, his previous anthology I had a story in. I'm going to go ahead and leave a link to that anthology in today's show notes. There's also a very affordable paperback edition just in time for Christmas. So if you have friends or family who enjoy reading science fiction, consider purchasing them a copy of either The Guardian or even The Officer, edited by Alastair Shaw. There are a number of indie sci-fi authors in there, including myself. Really cool gift idea if you're interested. Okay, on to Alyssa Jefferson. I'm going to begin, as I always do, by reading her Amazon author bio. I'm Alyssa, and if you love a good love story, then I'm just like you. I prefer the kind of story that hurts so good, where I want the main characters to fall in love so badly that it feels like a squeegee is wringing all the hopes and dreams of my heart into a Kindle-shaped puddle on my floor. I love to read. I love to write. I love to imagine. Honestly, most of the time I'm doing one, two, or three of these things. I decided to write romance novels because I just genuinely want there to be more of them. I firmly believe that love is love, every race, gender, and orientation, and the more there is of it, the better off we will all be. Love is the opposite of every bad thing, and is the origin of every good one. Speaking of love, mine is all wrapped up in a good-looking guy who put a ring on it 7 years ago, our adorable toddler who basically looks like a miniature version of aforementioned ring guy, and the fur baby who keeps my laptop warm when I'm not using it, or occasionally when I am. All right, so there's Alyssa's Amazon author bio. Very nice, sort of stirring there, discussing love and its virtues in the world. Alyssa has a couple of novels out. The one from which I'm reading today is called Christmas Melody, A Romance for the Holidays. And I guess I'd call this kind of a sweet romance or a holiday romance. And then her other title that she has out right now is Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth, London in Love, A Pride and Prejudice Variation Romance. And you might remember I had Elizabeth Ann West on the show for an interview as well as a reading from one of her Pride and Prejudice variations a few months ago now. I can link to that in the show notes as well. In fact, I think I will. That's kind of interesting. That's still on the radar, that Pride and Prejudice variations stuff. But today we're going to be reading from this Christmas Melody, sort of in preparation for the holidays as we enter December here. Christmas Melody is a brand new book. Looks like it was just published in November 20th, of this year, 2017. And London in Love has come out since then. So Alyssa's doing some rapid release so far, and this is her first stuff in the indie market. So I'm going to go ahead now and read the Christmas Melody book description, the book blurb from Amazon. If Melody Parrish could have one wish, it would be to get married and start a family, just as her two sisters and most of her friends have done. Instead, Mel has a different fate. A mystical power she discovered in her childhood enables her to grant people their deepest wish every year at Christmas time. For anyone except herself. Mel has learned that people's wishes aren't always what is best for them, and their motives aren't always pure. Now that she is 30 years old, she is disillusioned and discouraged, tired of granting everyone else's wishes but her own. Dr. Mitch Westacott has a wish, but it might have come too late. After years of taking his fiancée and son for granted, he wants nothing more than to win them back. When a chance meeting with Mel leads to a friendship that puts him closer to getting his wish than he even realizes, he finds himself unexpectedly drawn to the energetic, friendly, charming girl with a torn ACL. But the chemistry between him and Melody may be just what his ex needs to be convinced to give him a second try. Melody never grants a wish unless she truly believes it is the right thing to do. But now she is afraid she can't trust her own heart. Will she regret it forever if she gives this little family what they are wishing for? This sweet holiday romance features a precocious 5-year-old, a sexy doctor who needs to be brought out of his shell, and an HEA for everybody who deserves one. All right, there's the blurb. So some things pop out to me right away. There are some obvious romance tropes at play. That HEA mentioned, if you don't know, is a happily ever after. Apparently that is requisite to writing a romance novel of any kind. There's a foil, right, in the fiancé. There's a baby daddy. The Westacott has a son with his fiancé. Of course, he's sexy, and that's mentioned, even though it's billed as a sweet romance, which probably means there isn't much steam, if any, but that he's physical attraction is described. And here's an interesting thing about this book. There's this mystical power that she has. So this is kind of like a Hallmark-ish type thing to my mind. It doesn't sound to me like the book is actually like cross-genre, like romance and fantasy. There is romantic fantasy genre stuff. It doesn't sound like that's what's happening in here to me. This isn't like secondary world stuff. It sounds like a sweet holiday romance story, but the backbone of the plot is this just sort of like absurd little like, she has this magical power. And I feel like there are a lot of films that have similar premises that come on TV around this time of year that are quite popular. So, yeah, if you enjoy that sort of thing at all, or if someone in your life does, then I recommend you have a look at A Christmas Melody, A Romance for the Holidays, which coincidentally is on a Kindle Countdown deal for 99 cents all of this week. So I'll have a direct link to the book in the show notes, as well as always to the author's website and Amazon author page. I've seen Alyssa Jefferson a little bit on K-boards, but as I said, she's brand new to the scene, so any support you want to do, if you reach out, if you do end up reading her books, all the usual stuff that indie authors love, like reviews and mailing list signups and all that good stuff, I'm sure she appreciates. As always, I want to mention for today's show that this reading is performed with the author's permission. It does not come from an official audio book. All right, I'm drawing blanks. I'm recording this late Friday evening. If you've been following the show, you've followed my saga of moving the show from Fridays to Saturdays as my schedule has changed and become very volatile late in the year with the teaching season. Thank you for sticking around. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate that you're here. I hope you get some value. I hope you enjoy the reading today. This is from Christmas Melody, A Romance for the Holidays by Alyssa Jefferson, and I'll see you again next week. Thanks. Christmas Melody, A Romance for the Holidays by Alyssa Jefferson. Chapter 1, Present Day. Melody Parrish? Yes, that's me. Melody stood up and hurried to meet the nurse at the door to the waiting room. That is, she hurried as much as you can when you have a sprained knee. Hopefully just a sprain. She still planned to run the turkey trot on Thanksgiving, and that was only 3 weeks away. I'll take your forms, Miss Parrish, and you can follow me to the exam room. Melody walked after the young, slender nurse. Everybody at this office looked attractive, young, and fit. It made her feel oddly insecure, even though she was only 30 years old, very fit, and indisputably pretty. It was probably being a twin that did it. Mel liked to stand out from a crowd, but she never seemed to do it. She wasn't even a standout in her own family. Now that they were grown up, Mel was the only sister still single and still living in Iowa. The others had moved and married, and Eliza even had two kids. Mel had opened her own yoga studio after college, and things had gone amazingly well. It was an active, fit, youthful community, and her location near a college campus made her studio a huge draw. Her business partner, Subha Merritt, taught most of the classes, while Mel handled the money, marketing, and whatever else needed doing. It had been a dream professionally, at first. But the thing about owning your own yoga studio is that it's very routine work. There's nowhere to go, nowhere to grow, unless they wanted to open another studio, which was becoming a distinct possibility, if Subha could convince Mel to go along with it. She had to do something. It had been almost 10 years of the same old thing. She'd settled down locally to be near her boyfriend, a local musician who had eventually dumped her and moved to Austin to focus on his band. Grayson taught Melody an important lesson. You should never make somebody a priority in your life unless you know you're a priority in his. Without the man she'd built her life around, Mel wasn't sure where to go. So here she'd stayed. Year after year, recognizing that her life had become stagnant, but unsure what she could do about it. 3 years ago, she'd taken up running, And as luck would have it, she'd tweaked her knee this summer, and the thing just wouldn't heal. So, here she was. The nurse told Mel to sit on an exam table while she checked her vital signs. Once she was left alone, Mel studied the diplomas hanging from the wall. Dr. Mitchell Westacott, orthopedic physician. Her heart started racing when she saw his name. That was unexpected, but not totally abnormal. It was that magical instinct she always seemed to have when she met someone who wanted something desperately. She knew then and there that she had to get to know Dr. Westacott better. She had to sing to him for Christmas. He was her next fated meeting, as she'd come to think of them. She sighed and looked down at her swollen knee. This was so inconvenient. Putting aside the fact that it's awkward to sing for total strangers, Mel's gift was still a total pain. Mel had begun to resist sharing her gift over the years. It was painful to help everyone else get what they wanted, while she seemed totally unable to help herself. She gave herself credit for Eliza's first pregnancy, even. Her sister had been trying for months when she came home for Christmas, and Mel serenaded her with silver bells. What would this man's wish be, she wondered. If it was something mean, then she just couldn't sing to him. And, even more importantly, how could she figure out how to serenade him at the doctor's office? That was the oddest part of her gift. Most people just don't expect to be sung to in daily life, so she got such weird looks and never any gratitude. Nobody knew that she was helping them. The fulfillment of their deepest wishes usually passed for a coincidence. The anonymity was less favorable when it meant more than half the people ended up thinking Mel was a total weirdo. The door opened after a short wait, and a man who was, if possible, even better looking than everyone else she had seen so far, stepped inside the door. "Hi, Melody. I'm Dr. Westacott. It's good to meet you." "You too." Mel tried to sit up straighter, and before she could stop herself, she was combing her fingers through her hair. She had this automatic reaction to good-looking men now, made worse when she noticed the lack of a wedding ring. She immediately felt silly and slouched again. Although, maybe she shouldn't look too dumpy. She tried to find a happy medium of posture, only stopping when she observed that Dr. Westacott seemed to notice her fidgeting. Maybe not a great idea to make the cute doctor think you're a spaz, she thought. "So, Dr. Abrams, tell me you tweaked your left knee on a run. Is that right?" Dr. Abrams was Mel's primary care doctor, who had referred her to the medical dreamboat now standing before her. "Yeah, I was jogging out in the rain and I slipped on some wet gravel and fell. It's been swollen for months and it isn't healing, so she sent me to you." Dr. Westacott sat down on the black stool by the computer, then rolled toward her. "Let's take a look." The exam was short. The doctor had her lie back while he went through range of motion exercises with her leg. He felt different ligaments with his muscular, tanned hands, and asked Mel how much pain she felt. Stupidly, she fibbed and said it didn't hurt a bit. His surprised expression reminded her that she was supposed to be receiving medical care, and she corrected her previous 1 to a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10. When he was finished, The doctor entered some information in the computer, then turned to face Mel again. "I wish I had better news for you," he said. "It feels like a small tear in your ACL. I want to get some x-rays taken so we can know for sure, but the range of motion and pain are a pretty good indicator." Melody sighed. "So much for running that turkey trot. So will I need surgery?" Dr. Westacott's phone buzzed, and he pulled it out of his pocket. He stared at the screen for a minute, frowning. Melody wouldn't have expected an orthopedic surgeon to be on call during a day of office visits, and she waited for him to put the phone away. No, he said distractedly. Seriously? Way to make me feel even more insignificant, she thought. Then what's the game plan? Can I keep running on it while it heals? He still only half looked at her, slipping the phone back in his pocket. We'll get the x-rays and then make a decision from there. But since you're a hobby runner and the tear seems minor, surgery is a last resort that we will probably be able to avoid. Melody's heart started racing again, and she knew what she had to say. Damn it, this was so awkward. Even more so since the doctor was practically ignoring her. A difficult thing to do during an exam. She felt about as interesting as the room's plain yellow wallpaper, and here she was, about to pry into her sexy doctor's personal matters, all so she could try to sing him a carol of all things. Good grief. One thing she could say was that she had never had a boring holiday season. "Was that something important? On your phone?" she asked, nodding toward the pocket where his phone's screen was lighting up again. "I apologize," he said, an attractive reddish blush spreading over his face as he removed the phone from his pocket to place it face down on the table. "It's important, but not urgent. It can wait until we're finished here." "Which I think we are, basically, so..." Unable to stay away, he picked up the phone again. Mel fought the urge to roll her eyes. Her instincts told her that the person who sent the messages Dr. Westacott was answering was intimately related to his deepest wish, but she wouldn't get anywhere with that today. She'd see him again. "Okay, well, thank you, I guess. Should I set up the x-ray with your staff on my way out?" "What? Oh, no. We'll order it for you at the hospital, then schedule a follow-up appointment later next week. Take care, Melanie." "Melody," she corrected, sliding carefully off of the exam table. The doctor barely seemed to notice her limping as she passed him through the open door. Men. This is why, after all these years, she was still single. Self-centered, inattentive men. The lab work had been a nightmare to schedule. First, it seemed Dr. Westacott had actually forgotten to put in the order, so after 2 days, she called the office and requested that he do it. Then, the hospital wanted her to come in during regular business hours, which wouldn't normally be a big deal, except that it was Mel's long-awaited, fit-for-the-holidays promotional week at the studio. Classes were sold out. Memberships were flying off the shelves, and it was all hands on deck around the place. So it would be another week until she could make it work. And in the meantime, she liked to think she got to be pretty adept at hopping around one-legged. Amos, who worked her front desk, had begun calling her Gimpy. Young and energetic, he insisted on doing almost everything that required standing, reaching, or moving in general for her when she was at the studio. As a result, the swelling had finally begun to go down, and after her x-ray, Mel began to feel confident that there was probably nothing wrong with her leg. Dr. Westacott had barely paid any attention to her. What did he know? When she got home from the clinic, Mel called her sister.
Good news! I think I can run the turkey trot after all.
Francie and Brent, her husband, would be in town for Thanksgiving. Now that Mom and Dad had sold their home to spend their retirement RVing across the country, Mel's somewhat cavernous and lonesome three-bedroom house had become the family's home for the holidays. Everyone would be arriving to stay with her in 6 short days.
"That's great! Is that what the doctor said?"
Francie asked.
"Yep," Mel lied. "It was just a tweak, and the swelling is totally gone now. So bright and early Thursday morning, tell that husband of yours to be ready to get his butt kicked."
Mel and Brent ran the turkey trot together every year, while Francie cheered them on from the sidelines.
"I will let him know. Hey, by the way, Mom thinks you're a lesbian."
"What?"
"Yeah, we talked on the phone 2 days ago. She can't understand why a pretty girl like you..."
"Oh my God, please stop."
"Can't find a man to settle down with."
"Seriously, I do not want to hear this."
"Just warning you, she's starting to worry that when you die, there'll be nobody but the cat to find you."
Mel didn't even have a cat anymore, and she was barely over 30.
"Okay, that's enough. What about you? Doesn't she have enough to pester you with?"
Mel stopped herself just in time from mentioning grandchildren. Francie had suffered 2 miscarriages in the year since her marriage. She was worried the cancer treatment might have made her infertile. But Mom knew none of this. So, the constant pestering about grandchildren was a thorn in Francie's side, the way Mel's singleness, and homosexuality, apparently, was in Mel's. When Francie didn't answer right away, Mel said,
"Francie?"
And then, a moment later, with that twingly sixth sense of hers, she knew.
"Oh, Francie, congratulations! How far along are you?"
She could hear her sister sniffling, and her voice shook with happiness.
20 weeks? I wanted to surprise you all at dinner. Mel, I just found out. It's a girl!"
Mel wiped at her own joyful tears, feeling in that way only a sister can, the true bliss of the moment. She hadn't brought about this gift with her caroling, but somehow that made it even more special.
"I'm so happy for you," she said. "Are you gigantic?"
"Actually, I'm not," Francie said. "I'm just showing a little bit, but remember how it was with Liz? She still wasn't showing until 24 weeks, and then, pop!"
Mel smiled.
"I remember."
"Wow."
As she let her sister regale her with happy pregnancy stories, Mel's heart was at peace. In moments like these, she wasn't restless or depressed, and she wasn't envious either, but she had to admit to herself later that night, she was lonely. On Thanksgiving morning, Mel got up early for the race. Most of the family had arrived the night before, but Mom and Dad would get here in the late morning. The house was spotless in anticipation of their arrival,
But Liz's kids had quickly seen to disrupting that, strewing toys about the playroom, and asking Aunt Mel to get out all the DVDs so they could choose what to watch before passing out in an exhausted heap of pillows, blankets, and DVD boxes on the floor. Mel sent Francie down the street for bagels, for Liz, Adam, and the kids, while she and Brent got ready for the race. Then the three of them headed downtown in the chilly November air. The race began and ended by the river, but moved over a bridge, through a college campus, and past countless businesses, including hers. It wasn't until after they had registered that her knee started to hurt again. Great. Francie would have noticed her limping, but Brent did not, so there was nobody to stop her from stupidly lining up with the other racing enthusiasts and shooting off like a dart through the morning fog. It was only a 5K. She could do it on a bad knee, right? Wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Francie watched, bemused and not truly surprised, as her husband tried to coax Mel along toward the finish line. She was limping badly, but wouldn't stop running, and they were dead last. They were about half a mile from the finish line when a handsome man approached Francie. "I see your knee is looking better," Dr. Westacott said, to the wrong sister. "Huh? Oh, you're mixing me up with my twin sister, I bet." She pointed up the road. "Mel's the one whose knee is definitely not looking better." Even in the distance, even in the dark, Mel could see the doctor's shocked face when he saw her hopping down the road like a one-legged, neon-wearing kangaroo. Dressed warmly in black compression leggings and a fleece jacket, the doctor had clearly been running the race himself. He ran back down the street toward her, gesturing with his arms. "Sit down," he called. "You can't run on that knee." Well, this was sufficiently embarrassing. "Do you know that guy?" Brent asked. Mel's face reddened. Dr. Westacott had almost reached them and was still waving his arms and shouting like a maniac. How had he recognized her when he'd barely said two words to her at her appointment? "He's my doctor." Brent frowned and said, "Ah, jeez, Mel, you aren't supposed to be running." His tone indicated that he wasn't truly surprised. "He never actually said that," Mel said, but she felt stupid and exhausted. Brent helped her to the curb, and she was seated there when the doctor reached them. His brown hair was ruffled from the wind, and in the warm light of the sunrise, his hazel eyes sparkled. His muscles were visible through his shirt, not too large, but very defined. When he knelt in front of her, Mel's heart started racing. "I meant to call you this week," he said apologetically, by way of greeting. "It's a worse tear than I thought. You have to stay off the knee while it's healing, or it'll tear even worse." Mel groaned when the doctor straightened her leg and began feeling her sore knee. "This is what I was afraid of." He pressed gently, and Mel yelped. "She can't walk," he said to Brent, who was looking distractedly toward the finish line. "Just finish the race," Mel said, annoyed. She liked her brother-in-law, but Brent was not the most selfless person. As Brent darted away, with promises to be right back and bring the car, Dr. Westacott helped Mel stand and hobble to a nearby bench.
"That's your husband?"
the doctor asked, not seeming too concerned with what the answer was.
"Brother-in-law,"
Mel corrected. Recognition dawned on his face.
"Right. I met your twin."
"I saw."
They were so close to the finish line. This stunk. Once Mel was seated again, Dr. Westacott knelt in front of her once more. Again with the heart racing. He was just so handsome. Maybe it wasn't only her gift that was causing this reaction.
"I should have called," he said absently. "This week has been..."
Ah, nope. It was definitely the gift. Mel felt like she would burst if she didn't ask him to explain more.
"You were distracted at the office, too," she said. "I hope everything's okay."
He glanced up at her. They locked eyes. And after a moment, his expression changed. He rose up onto the bench beside her and said, "Truthfully, this is the worst year of my life. I'm dealing with..." He stopped, shaking his head. "Sorry, you don't want to hear this." She shrugged her shoulders.
"Sometimes it's easier telling a stranger," she said.
He gave her a mirthless smile. "My fiancé dumped me. She met somebody else." Ouch. Having someone you love put somebody else ahead of you, whether a person or a passion, really hurt. Mel knew what that was like. "I'm sorry," she said.
"I keep trying to convince her to give us another shot," he said. "We have a son together.
He paused, gathering himself. "I hate the idea of him having another dad, you know?" Mel nodded, and Dr. Westacott seemed encouraged enough to continue. "She brought Aiden to her new boyfriend's family's place for Thanksgiving. They live in Nebraska." Mel's heart ached. What a painful thing to have to deal with, and at the holidays, too. She could imagine that having a kid would just make a split up even more unbearable.
"That's awful. I'm really sorry," she repeated.
In that moment, she wanted to just sing a quick carol and be done with it. Fix his life and let him go on his merry way. But something told her that getting back together with a woman who didn't necessarily love him wouldn't be the best thing for Dr. Westacott. Or for anybody, for that matter. It might be what he wanted, but that didn't make it likely to make him happy in the long run. She just wasn't sure. She needed more information. So she didn't sing. Instead, she said, "Do you have plans for Thanksgiving?" He cocked his head to the side.
"No, I don't."
"My whole family is in town. Parents, sisters, niece, and nephew. We have room for more. Want to join us?"
Mel's heart pounded in her chest as she gave the invitation. It wasn't the most normal thing to do, inviting your doctor to your house for a major holiday dinner, but she felt so very sorry for him. And the thought of him being alone for the holiday made her truly sympathetic. She knew what it was like to be lonely.
"You could keep an eye on the old knee that way," she added, giving him an inviting smile.
Dr. Westacott shook his head, but he was smiling, a disbelieving, amused look on his face.
"You know what? Sure, I'd love to."
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.